himself to look away from Zoe. He spun back to the trees. He saw a flash of gold through the parted branches of a fir. Aggravated by the interruption, X stalked back down the path, the trees exploding with snow as he pushed past them. He would terrify whoever it was and send him running. It wouldn't be difficult. He knew how grim and malevolent he must look with his wild eyes and his hair trailing him, ragged as fire. The glint of gold was maybe 200 feet back, still hidden by trees. X bore down on the intruder. Whoever it was would surely turn and flee before he'd even reached them. But something strange happened. Rather than retreating, the figure moved toward him, scudding through the snow. X himself was being hunted. Ripper appeared suddenly, breathless and fierce, and firing words. "The lords are coming," she said. "I am here to warn you." X was so shocked to see her that he could not speak. Ripper waited a moment, then continued, her voice rising. "Struck dumb, are you?" she said. "You must do what you were sent to do. You have dallied too long with your lover. The thing that needs stiffening is your spine. Do you not know how the lords watch you? Do you not know how your insolence makes them seethe? I am ignorant of their plan, but they will surely unleash hell if you betray them again." She fell silent, finally. She wore only black boots and her golden dress, which looked like a Christmas ornament against the snow. Her old bounty hunter tattoos peeked out from beneath her lacy sleeves. "How did you come to be here?" said X. "That is what you would ask me," said Ripper angrily. "You have a friend in Regent, and I have a friend in that repulsive Russian. If you must know, I had to promise him a kiss, which I may never forgive you for. I have not kissed anyone for 184 years, and I had hoped for a grander prize." She took X's arm. She turned him back toward Zoe's father. "Come," she said. "Let us find that soul that needs taking. I will crush the man's throat myself if you cannot." "I will do what is required," he said. "But you must return to the lowlands before your absence is discovered." "I will not," she said. "Not until this thing is done." "I insist, Ripper," he said. "You have endangered yourself enough on my behalf."
"And I have done it gladly, foolish boy," she said. "I am to rot for eternity in any case. I should be glad to think back on the one or two occasions I tried to be kind."
X accepted this gratefully. Though the trembling still pulsed through him, he felt stronger with Ripper by his side. They walked through the dwindling trees, Ripper's eyes darting around with fascination. She took in the enormous pines, the streaks of sky, the snowflakes that drifted down like motes of dust. She had collected her last soul many years ago. She hadn't been in the overworld for decades. They stopped at the top of the hill and peered down at the tense figures below. Zoe was just now reaching the lake.
"Is that your blurting girl?" said Ripper.
"And her father," said X. Once more, the thought of taking the man's soul filled him with dread.
"This calling of ours," he said. "Did it never bring you shame? What we call bounties are human beings, after all."
Ripper seemed surprised by the question.
"Surely you do not think of them as human," she said.
"Was I human when I cracked the skull of that serving girl? Or when I left her corpse to grow cold in the street? Was I human when I rendered my babies motherless?
No. These souls we take have given up all claims on humanity. They are garbage. And we are dustmen."
20. Zoe's father stared at her as if she couldn't be real. His fishing pole fell from his hand and clattered against the ice. Zoe stomped the last few feet to the lake. Her body was shaking uncontrollably, vibrating almost. She hated it. It made her seem weak. She wanted her father to feel nothing from her but disgust. She wanted him to know, even before she spoke, that she loathed him, that she saw him for what he was, that he had gotten away with nothing. But the sight of him stirred up tenderness, too. She hadn't expected that. Part of her wanted to run to him. He was her father. He used to cut her sandwiches into ridiculous shapes. Once he used a cookie cutter to cut a star out of the middle. He used to tell her bedtime stories and insert her into famous moments in history. She'd cured smallpox, begged Decca Records not to reject the Beatles, and refused to board the Titanic when she heard there were only 20 lifeboats. You couldn't count on him, but when he hugged you, you really felt hugged. No. He was vile. He was poison. She didn't have to know what he'd done with Stan when he was young. She didn't have to know exactly why X was taking him. Because she knew what he'd done to her family. He had deserted them. He was the domino that pushed all the others down. The lake was fringed with dead reeds poking up through the snow. Zoe picked her way through them, still holding her father's eyes. The thoughts in her head were dizzying. Love, hate, forgiveness, revenge. Her boots struck a rock in the reeds. She stumbled forward. She landed on her knees on the ice, furious with herself for being so clumsy. When she looked up again, her father had broken out of his daze and was scrambling to help her. "Zoe!" he called. The sight of his teary face rushing toward her was too much. It softened her and repulsed her, all in the same moment. "Don't touch me!" she screamed. "Are you kidding?" She had never spoken to him like that before. Not once in her life. Her father backed away, palms in the air, indicating that he meant no harm. He seemed startled by the rage radiating from her. He hung his head. "He can't even look at me," thought Zoe. "The coward." She got to her feet. She brushed the ice from her clothes. "How did you find me? And who are they?" her father said, gesturing to the hill behind her. Zoe was stunned to see X standing with a woman she'd never seen before. She knew from her golden dress and her coolly ferocious air that it was Ripper.
"You don't want to know," she answered coldly.
Her father picked up his fishing pole.
"Come into the shed. It's warmer," he said. "Let's not do this out here."
He turned away. Zoe thought about just walking away right then and there. Her father must have known what she was thinking.
"Don't go,"
he said over his shoulder.
"You came this far to tell me how much you hate me. So come tell me. I deserve it."
The shed creaked in the wind. It'd been built out of salvaged plywood and 2x4s. One of the walls still had "Post No Bills" stenciled onto it in black spray paint, and sat on runners so her father could slide it around the lake. Inside, there was a thermos, a wooden stool, a copy of some ridiculous self-help book, and an electric heater powered by a small, puttering generator. Where the floor should have been, there was a 5x5-foot patch of cloudy ice with a dark hole in the center, like a bull's eye. Zoe's cell rang as she entered the shed. "Me," it said. Jonah was trying to FaceTime her now. She silenced the phone, but a text popped up a minute later. "It's raining so bad. I need someone to talk to. Me and Spock are under the bed. Wait, now Uhura is too." Zoe frowned and put the phone in her pocket.
She just needed a few minutes with her father. Then she'd call Jonah back. In a few minutes, everything would be different. X would be here.
Was that Jonah?
Her father asked. His voice broke the slightest bit.
Don't you dare say his name,
Zoe told him. Her father nodded. He stood in a corner of the shed, hugging his spindly chest with his arms as if to comfort himself. He looked as if he were going to cry. He was so much weaker than she was.
How did you find me?
He said.
You don't get to talk,
she said. It was unbearable to be so close to him. The air felt toxic. Even the silence was awful. The way it fed on itself and grew bigger and bigger. And yet some part of her, a part she hated, a part she'd crush if she could, wanted to hug him.
Zoe,
her father said,
I never meant to hurt you.
You don't get to talk, she said. And you definitely don't get to say dumb bullshit crap. But he couldn't stop himself.
It would have been worse if I'd stayed, he said.
Really? Said Zoe. She loathed the sound of his voice. It would have been worse? She shouted. She threw open the door of the shed. I can't be in here with you, she said. She stormed away on the ice. Her father followed her. The lake had been shoveled clean. It was glassy and slick. The holes were everywhere. When she'd put 20 feet between them, she stopped and turned to him. He knew not to come any closer. Jonah used to punch himself in the chest to stop his heart from hurting, she said. Would it have been worse than that?
No,
her father said quietly. I almost killed myself in a cave just so the cops would go get your body, she said. Would it have been worse than that?
No, he said again.
Mom didn't have a life when you were alive, she said. And she has even less of a life now. Would it have been worse than that?
No, Zoe, he said. No.
You don't get to talk, she screamed, then took it up like a chant. You don't get to talk. You don't get to talk. Her father made a tent out of his hands and hid his face behind it. He was sobbing. He was pathetic. Zoe walked toward him so purposefully that fear flashed in his eyes. He stepped backward toward the hut. Your BFF Stan? She said. He murdered 2 people we loved. With a fireplace poker. Would it have been worse than that? Her father looked stricken.
Who did Stan kill?
He said. Zoe let the question hang in the air, unsure if she wanted to answer it. He didn't get to talk. Bert and Betty, she said finally. Her father shocked her by letting out a pained cry. He spun away from her. Suddenly, he seemed consumed with an energy he couldn't control. He knelt down on the ice and checked a fishing line that ran into a nearby hole. When he'd finished, he crawled to another, and then another. He couldn't, or wouldn't, look at her again. He never left his knees. He scrabbled around like an animal. It scared her. She shouted, "Stop!" He wouldn't. When he'd run out of holes, he finally stood. Still, he didn't turn. It was like he'd forgotten she was there, or was trying to drive her away. There was a giant sort of corkscrew, an auger, leaning against the shed. Her father took it and, hands trembling, began to screw yet another hole into the ice. Above them, the sky darkened. Zoe looked up at the hills. The trees were a solid black mass now,
an army waiting for orders. X and Ripper stood there, watching. Soon it would all be over. She didn't know if she was ready. Had she said everything she'd wanted to say? Had she gotten what she wanted? What had she wanted? Her father was twisting the auger furiously. The hole was growing. Zoe tried to squash every bit of sympathy, but she couldn't. He looked like a man digging his own grave. "I ran from Stan. Not from you," he said suddenly. He threw down the auger and walked toward her. "I grew up with him, did you know that?" he said. His eyes were wild. It was Zoe who stepped backward this time. "Yes," she said. "Mom told me." "Did she tell you he was like a virus?" he said. That he was hateful and merciless and lonely, even when he was a kid? Did she tell you how he polluted everything? When we were kids, he did things. We did things that I'll never forgive myself for. I left Virginia because of him. Married your mother. Changed my name. Changed my heart. Truly. I mean, look, to be honest, you changed my heart. You and Jonah and your mom. You can laugh if you want. Zoe knew she was supposed to say something comforting. She said nothing. She made her face blank. Her phone buzzed in her pocket. More texts from Jonah. It had to be. "I spent almost, what, 20 years looking over my shoulder?" her father said. "I was terrified Stan would find me. You don't just walk away from someone like that. They won't accept it. They're feeding on you. But I got away from Stan. I tried to be a dad. Tried to forgive myself. Tried to make some goddamn money so we could at least freaking live. You all used to laugh at my schemes, but every time I was away, every time I was on the road, every time I disappeared, I was trying to get something going. I'm not smart like you, Zoe. No, don't make that face. It's okay. I'm just not. I mean, look at me. But I tried every legitimate law-abiding thing I could think of. You think I wanted your mom to work as hard as she did? Be careful who you fall in love with, Zoe. You've got a big, big heart. Don't waste it like your mother wasted hers on me." Her father stopped talking as abruptly as he'd started. He picked the auger off the ice once more and began drilling, desperate to do something with his hands. "Why did you freak out about Bert and Betty?" said Zoe. "You never loved them like the rest of us did. You barely knew them. Because you were never around. So why do you care what happened to them?" Her father seemed not to have heard her. 20 years I looked over my shoulder," he said. "You said that already," said Zoe. "Answer my question." But it was as if her father were talking to himself now. "I was so careful," he said. "Because I knew Stan would never stop looking for me." Zoe's phone buzzed again, jittery as a bomb. She was about to read Jonah's text when something caught her attention out on the edge of the lake. The ice had begun to change. Color was seeping in. It was darker than the time with Stan, more red than orange, and it spread slowly, like a sickness. Her father was too obsessed with his hole to notice. "But you can't hide forever, can you?" he said. "I mean, you found me here. And this place isn't just off the grid, it's never even heard of the freaking grid." He wiped the sweat from his forehead. "So Stan found me, tracked me down in Montana. And he saw, in 2 seconds, how desperate I was. How broke I was.
How ashamed I was of just years and years and years of failure. I mean, I was good in a cave, but let's face it. I was always pretty useless above ground. Zoe looked back to the hill. X and Ripper were sweeping down it now. Ripper's dark hair was swept up in a bun. Her bare neck was glinting. Zoe's father still hadn't seen them. "Why did you freak out about the Wallaces?" she said again. "Answer my question." X and Ripper came to the bottom of the hill, and, as if they'd planned it, leaped simultaneously over the reeds. They were close now. The red tide beneath the ice was just a few steps ahead of them, like a carpet unfurling. "Answer my question!" Zoe shouted. But he wouldn't. He wouldn't even look at her. He had to finish his story. He had to purge himself of it. Just as he had to finish the hole that was opening at his feet. "Stan had a couple of ideas for making money," her father said. "They weren't dangerous. They weren't going to hurt anybody, but I'm not gonna lie, they weren't exactly legal. The first one worked, and then the second one worked. Having a little money was amazing. Thrilling. I can't even describe it. I bought Jonah that ladybug bed, even though he was too old for the thing. Remember? Then, the third time around, somebody did get hurt. An innocent person, I mean. She didn't get hurt bad, but still. Stan called it acceptable collateral damage." Her father was still crying. He twisted the auger so hard it was as if he were punishing himself. Zoe was crying now, too. "Answer my question," she said. "Stan eventually ran out of ideas for making money," her father said. "He told me it was my turn to think of something." Zoe was shaking again. She couldn't control it. It was taking over her body like the red stain was taking over the ice. She finally understood what her father was about to say, and she didn't know if she could stand to hear it. "But I didn't have any ideas," he said. "But Stan had gotten... he'd gotten rabid, almost. He demanded I come up with something." The hole was deepening, widening. Sweat trickled down her father's neck. "I told him there was an old couple who lived on the lake," he said. The ice was changing faster, the red crawling toward them like a tide. Zoe's phone was buzzing. Her father still wouldn't look at her. "I told him I thought they might have some money," he said. Her father dropped his head to the top of the auger, sobbing. He was oblivious to everything but his own misery. "I feared for those people. I swear to God," he said. "I told Stan I wanted no part of hurting Bert and Betty, but he went crazy on me. Went absolutely apeshit. You don't say no to somebody like that. He threatened to tell your mother everything. Threatened to hurt you kids. Threatened to tell the world who I really was. I didn't care if the world knew. The world never gave a crap about me. But I couldn't let your mom and you kids down again. I figured I'd rather die than do that." He paused. "So I started looking for a way to die." Her father straightened up now and resumed drilling. The hole was nearly finished. "Bert and Betty didn't have any money," said Zoe. "Stan killed them for nothing. He killed them because of you." Her father gave the auger one last twist, then fell backward, bewildered. Red water surged up through the hole, like blood. 21. X strode toward them, Ripper at his side. He was so close to his bounty that the trembling had all but taken over his body and begun breathing for him. He never felt more inhuman, more monstrous than in these moments. He was ashamed that Zoe would see him like this a second time, that she'd see him shake and scream and spit vile oaths, all the tenderness she'd awoken in him suffocated by rage. Could she really choose him? Over her own father? X looked to her for a sign that she was still committed to their plan, but she was turned away. He couldn't make himself believe that he deserved her. The sensation of being loved was still too alien and new. He wanted to trust it, wanted to wrap himself in it, wanted to give himself up to it entirely. But this anger coursing through him made him feel polluted, unworthy, undeserving of even the name she'd given him. Love felt like a blanket someone was bound to yank away. The warmer he got now, the colder he would be later. He needed to see Zoe's face. He needed to be sure she hadn't changed her mind. X turned to her father and found that he was gaping at him in shock. He held a strange, twisted piece of metal in his hands. Dark water was pooling at his feet. He seemed to recognize X from their moment on the beach the day before. X could see him replaying the conversation in his head. "Is this your first time in Canada?"
"Is this Canada?"
X motioned for Ripper to stay behind. She made a small, pouty sound and stopped walking, the hem of her dress waving above her boots. X went ahead alone. Yet again he looked to Zoe, and finally she turned. Her face was aflame with anger. X had never seen her features so distorted. She looked ready to kill her father herself. She rushed toward X. She embraced him, but for the first time she felt cold and stiff, utterly unlike herself. She gripped his arm so hard he could feel her nails even through his coat. She gestured toward her father. "He's the reason Stan killed Bert and Betty," she said.
"Yes," said X grimly. "He is."
"Take him," said Zoe. X was startled by her fury. Had he done this to her? While she had been teaching him about kindness, had he been teaching her about rage? He tried to banish this new fear, tried to unthink the thought. But it had taken hold. Its roots were spreading. Nonetheless, he nodded.
"Go to Ripper," he said. "Walk to the woods. Do not look back."
Ripper stepped forward. X did not know how she would greet Zoe. He prayed she would not be sarcastic or manic or dance in some outlandish way, nor how Zoe would respond in her present state. They were tentative at first, but seemed to recognize something in each other. X could not stop studying them. It occurred to him that they were the only two people who had ever held him, had ever praised him, had ever loved him. He could see his entire life, everything that was decent and humane, in their faces. When X was young, he hadn't understood that Ripper cared for him as if he were one of her own lost children. He understood it now. He watched as Zoe's rage began to melt in her presence. He watched as Ripper put an arm around her shoulder, like a great, warm wing. "I feel as if we are already well acquainted, dear girl," she said. "Perhaps it is because X made me read your letter aloud 25 times. Zoe smiled weakly. X watched as they crossed the lake, their arms linked, their heads touching gently. He heard Ripper tell Zoe that the lords were on their way.
"But they'll leave us alone once X takes my dad," said Zoe.
"Right?"
"Perhaps they will," said Ripper. "What if he decides he can't take him?" said Zoe.
"I suspect they will make X watch as they murder you in some colorful way," said Ripper in an incongruously sweet voice. But perhaps that is too obvious. The lords are a mystery, I confess. One never knows when they will feel the need to be creative.
X turned at last toward his bounty, who was cowering against the shed and gripping the weird piece of metal as if it might protect him. X tried to tell himself that the man meant nothing to him, that his fate was of his own making, that his only name was 16th Soul. But when he gazed at him, all he saw was Zoe's father. All he saw were Jonah's eyes. X pulled the metal out of the man's hand. He flung it across the ice. It skidded to the far edge of the lake before coming to rest in a clump of dead reeds.
"Have you any other toys we should dispose of?"
said X. The father was too frightened to speak. He looked pleadingly at X. And then he ran. Why did they always run? Every one of them had run. What made them imagine they could get away? X watched as Zoe's father raced for the shore, stumbling and slipping as he went. It was a pathetic spectacle. He remembered telling Zoe that her father was not evil, just weak. Had she not believed him? Could she really hate such a pitiful person? Or was she just reeling from the shock and rage? Would she blame X tomorrow, and forever after, for what she told him to do today? With a flick of his hand, X yanked the man back. It was as if he were on an invisible tether, and dashed him against the wooden shed. He left him suspended there, his feet dangling above the ground. With a few more gestures, he sent ice crawling like murderous ivy toward the man's hands and feet. Zoe's father watched helplessly as it bound him to the shed.
"What do you want from me?"
he said miserably.
"You can take anything I have. You can take anything you want."
"Yes," said X darkly. "I know."
"So what do you want?"
said Zoe's father. X unbuttoned his coat and let it fall to the ice in a heap.
"Just your soul," he said, "which you have made poor use of."
X cast his eyes around the lake.
"Which of these holes do you choose for your grave?"
Zoe's father flailed wildly, but the ice held him fast. X ignored his exertions. He had seen such desperation many times, and pulled his shirt over his head. The man's sins were so eager to show themselves that X's back was burning. He had to turn off his mind, had to shut out the man's questions, had to stop looking at his eyes. X's body knew what to do. He just had to let his body do it. He dropped his shirt. It mushroomed briefly as it fell. He turned away from Zoe's father and stretched out his arms. The muscles in his back and shoulders were aching. The cold air stung his skin. He summoned up the man's sins. He could feel the terrible images starting to crawl across his back. Zoe's father let out a sob.
"I know what I did,"
he shouted through his tears.
"You don't have to show me. I know everything I did."
X was in such turmoil that the words cut through him. He felt more keenly than ever that, whether or not he was only doing what the lords had commanded, whether or not the punishment was just, he was piercing another human being's heart. Rippers said they were dust men. But that was a kindly lie. She knew better, and so did he. He was a killer. And worse, he was a torturer. He lowered his arms before the movie was over. His back went white. Behind him, Zoe's father gave a grateful sob. He tried to stop crying, but couldn't. When X turned, the man's chest was heaving and his face was a storm of tears. He looked raw and terrified. A helpless bird.
"Wait, stop, please,"
he said.
"Talk to me for a second. Just for a second, okay? You love my daughter, right? I can see that. I saw the way you hugged her. I saw the way you looked at her. It's the way I used to look at her mother.
X refused to listen. This man was nothing to him.
He was just the 16th soul.
Stop your mouth,
he told Zoe's father, just as he had once told Stan,
or I will plug it with my fist.
Zoe's father ignored the threat. He knew this was his last chance to speak.
But if you love Zoe, why do this?
He said.
Why murder her own father?
X knew he shouldn't answer, but the words rushed out of him.
I do it because she asks me to,
he shouted.
I do it because you have hurt her who is dearest to me. I do it because either you or I must be banished to the lowlands, and I have endured that darkness long enough.
It was as if X were defending the monstrous act not just to Zoe's father, but to himself. He could not stop.
If I do not take your soul, I will never see Zoe again. Never feel her touch. Never hear her voice. Never curl her hair around my fingers. My heart was born in winter, sir, and I will not go back to the cold.
Zoe's father said nothing. He had run out of words, as they always did. But just as X was about to take the 16th soul down from the shed and plunge him into the lake, the 16th soul started screaming Zoe's name. His voice was startling. It tore the air open.
Zoe!
He screamed.
Zoe! Please!
X turned frantically and saw that Zoe and Ripper were still ascending the hill to the woods. They stopped now. Ripper held Zoe tightly, urging her not to turn.
Zoe!
Her father shouted.
Listen to me! Zoe!
X leaped at him and struck him hard across the face.
I showed you a kindness, damn you, he said. I could have forced you to behold all your sins, but I did not. And yet you beg your daughter for sympathy? She will not save you. She is not your daughter anymore. I don't want her to save me,
said Zoe's father. And again he began screaming.
Zoe! Zoe! You don't have to look at me. Just listen. Zoe, I'm sorry. Please. Please. Please know that I'm sorry. I was a disgrace as a father. As a man, as everything. I disgust myself. I don't deserve to live. And life without you and Jonah and your mom, it's not really living anyway. I love you, okay? I absolutely freaking love you. If you don't believe anything else I ever said, please, please, please believe that.
He was breathing so hard now that he had to collect himself before he could say more.
If me dying helps you somehow, then I'll do it,
he shouted with what energy he had left.
I mean, I already died once. It's gotta be easier the second time, right? I know you don't have any reason to believe me, but I think you're awesome, Zoe, and you'll always be my girl.
Zoe's father turned to X now.
If you want my soul, just take it, he said.
Take it!
X was closing in on him now, when, up on the hill, Zoe finally turned toward them. She walked back down to the lake, her steps heavy and trance-like. Ripper could not stop her. Together they descended and stepped on the dead reeds, which crackled under their feet. Zoe was not looking at her father, but at X. Nearby, a cluster of wild turkeys, black and red against the snow, raised their heads to X now, too. Even they seemed to be waiting. X took the man's slender neck in his hand. Zoe's father gasped, but he did not resist. Did not speak, did not look away.
he just stared at X. Stared at him with Jonah's eyes. X began closing his fist around his windpipe. And then he stopped, not knowing why. He felt a kind of stirring in his brain. A wind, almost. As if someone had cracked a window or pushed open a door. It was Zoe. She was searching his thoughts. She'd told him that he was never to search hers. "There will be no mind melding, or whatever that is," she'd said. Yet here she was trying to figure out what he was thinking. Why he was hesitating. She was walking toward him across the lake, with Ripper following close behind. She was stepping around the holes. She seemed to know where they lay, even without looking. And all the while, she was delving deeper and deeper into X. She was unfolding him, gently, like he was a piece of paper that might come apart in her hands. Surely she knew what she would find. She taught him the word herself. Mercy. As suddenly as it had begun, the movement in his mind ceased. The wind retreated. The window closed. The door shut. X looked to Zoe. She'd stopped 20 feet away. She was weeping. Her hair was white with snow. She nodded to X. She seemed to want to reassure him. To soothe him. To make him feel loved. Her eyes said, "It's okay. It's okay. It's okay. Let him go." X ripped Zoe's father from the shed by his neck. The ice shattered. The plywood groaned and splintered, then threw him to the ground. Zoe drew closer. She knelt beside her father. X saw hope kindle in the man's eyes, as if he expected his daughter to throw herself into his arms. X knew that she wouldn't. "We're letting you go," Zoe told her father calmly. "Because we don't want to turn into you." Her father began to speak, but she shook her head. "You don't get to talk," she said. "Remember?" She paused. "I was going to have X drown you in this lake, but I love him too much to make him do that. So I'm going to let you keep running and hiding and ice fishing or whatever, although, honestly, it seems like you're really bad at it." Zoe looked at the auger, the fishing rods, the holes. Her father had caught nothing at all. "I never want to see you again, Dad," she said. "I mean it. And that's the last time I'm ever going to call you Dad. I'm going to try to forgive you, not because you deserve it, but because I don't want you to mess up my heart the way Stan messed up yours. I'm going to try to remember the good stuff. There was some good stuff." Zoe stopped and stood. "Okay, that's enough. I'm done talking to you. I'm gonna go and have a life. I'm going to have a life with X and Mom and Jonah. X and I won't give up until we figure out how. It's going to be a good life. And you won't get to watch." Zoe went to X. He put his arm around her shoulder, pulled her to his chest, and spoke to her quietly. Ripper approached Zoe's father. "I would advise you to run, little rabbit," she said. "X may not be hungry for your soul, but my own stomach is rumbling." Zoe's father got to his feet. He was sobbing, but he must have known Zoe wouldn't listen to another word. He scrambled into the woods without looking back. The trees quaked and shed some snow, then settled once more. X had felt no joy when Zoe said she would make a life with him, for he knew how unlikely it was. He had let her father go free, so the lords would almost certainly haul him back to the lowlands. He suspected Dervish was lurking in the forest even now.
He could picture him gouging the bark of a tree with his nails, barely able to contain his glee.
X listened.
He waited. He looked to Zoe and Ripper, and saw that they were waiting too. But everything was silent. There was nothing but the sound of their breathing and the tiny puffs of smoke it made, like steam from a train. He stooped to collect his clothes and began pulling them on. No one spoke, for fear it would unleash something. Their eyes scanned the blackening woods. Nothing. Maybe the lords wouldn't come? Maybe Regent had convinced them that X had been punished enough? With each moment that passed, X became more and more convinced that it was possible. He was still in the grip of the trembling. He was still feverish, still dizzy. His body was not his own. But Zoe had nursed him before, and he felt sure that if he could just lay his head against her, if he could just feel her cool breath settling over him, they could defeat the trembling forever. Her father would be free. So would X. The lords would not own him any longer. But then the buzzing began. They all heard it. It was faint, but insistent. It sounded like a black fly circling closer and closer. X whirled toward it. It was coming from Zoe. She searched her pockets. It was her phone. It was only her phone. Zoe and Ripper stared down to read what was written there. Their faces looked eerie in the screen's yellow glow. X was about to look away when Zoe gasped. The noise hit him like a punch. She seemed unable to speak, so Ripper spoke for her. "The lords are striking," she said. X had known Ripper virtually his whole life. He had seen her fight and curse and flirt and sing. He had seen her tear out her fingernails and beg to be beaten. He had literally seen her in hell, but he'd never seen her afraid. She was afraid now. X wheeled around. The sky, the woods, the lake, they all spun before his eyes. But he found nothing to fear. The world was empty. He was certain of it. "I see no threat," he said. Zoe held out her phone, as if he could read it. Her palm was shaking.
I don't think they're coming after us, she said haltingly. I think they're going after Jonah.
22.
X and Ripper dove into holes in the ice. Zoe had begged them to take her with them, but they left her standing on the lake. She would only have slowed them down. They rushed toward Jonah through water, then earth, then water again as they joined the stream that ran behind the Bissell's house. X was a powerful swimmer. Ripper matched him stroke for stroke. Her hair had come loose. X could see it fanning out under the water, floating above her for a moment, then sinking down again. He didn't know what they'd find at Zoe's house, but he was glad to have Ripper with him. He felt there was nothing she wouldn't do for him, nor he for her. As they neared the surface, light began to leak down and glint off her dress. She shimmered like an iridescent fish. The cold water gummed up their muscles. It felt nearly solid. It seemed not to want to let them through. X had promised Zoe three things. That he would save Jonah. That neither he nor her mother would ever discover that her father was still alive. And that he himself would return to her one more time. But X felt no certainty now. He pictured Jonah in his room, surrounded by figurines of animals and elves. He pictured him on his ladybug bed, hugging Spock and Uhura to his chest, and trying to gentle them down with that quavering voice that seemed to run in the family.
Don't be scared, guys. Because I'm not scared.
As X and Ripper reached the pocket of air beneath the ice, their lungs were bursting. He nodded to her.
Together they raised their fists and punched through the translucent ceiling. Ice fell into their eyes. It rained down around them in splinters. Ripper climbed out of the river first, her hair flat against her skull, her dress twisted and wrinkled as tissue paper. She helped X out of the water. The moon was already up. For a moment, they stood shivering and stamping. X felt a presence behind them. It seemed enormous. It was breathing and pulsing and watching them. He wished with his whole being that he didn't have to turn. But he did. 100 lords stood in a chain around Zoe's house. The house itself was so thickly coated with ice that X could hardly make out the windows, the roof, the doors. The land around it was ravaged and scarred. Trees had been pulled out of the ground and hurled like sticks. What was more, everything was frozen and glittering, so that there was an awful beauty to the devastation. It was a wasteland strung with diamonds. The willow where Jonah had buried the Ninja Dad t-shirt lay on its side, broken and contorted as if its neck had been snapped. The lords glowered at X and Ripper across the upturned earth. They seemed to be daring them to step forward and engage. Their silky garments, purple and green and yellow and red, were sickeningly vivid against the desolation of the hill. Their golden bands shone in the moonlight. "Apparently," said Ripper, "we will not be taking them by surprise." X gave a grim laugh. "You have been a fine teacher to me," he said quietly. "Might I ask you to recommend a strategy one last time? If it would help, I would trade myself for the boy 1,000 times."
"Well, we could ask them nicely," said Ripper.
"But the fact that the lords have not already descended upon you and pulled you back to the lowlands by your handsome hair suggests that they want more than merely to bring you home. They want to boil your heart. They want you to watch as you listen to that poor boy scream." Ripper paused. She seemed to regret speaking so bluntly, for X's face was clouded with pain. "That being the case," she continued, "I propose a simple, unornamented fight to the death. I have always rather enjoyed them, though they're never quite as satisfying when no one can actually die." Together, they circled the house at a safe distance, looking for weaknesses in the chain of bodies. There were none. The lords remained still, but even their stillness was full of menace. They were coiled and ready to strike. X peered into every face. Some were handsome, some ancient. Some were lovely, some desiccated or burned. No one regarded him with anything but disgust. X had questioned their authority. He had shamed them. He had been offered an unheard-of chance to leave the lowlands forever. A chance perhaps even the lords themselves had prayed for, and made a mockery of it. He'd refused to collect even one more soul. Now it was as if X and the lords were opposing magnets. The air between them vibrated with hatred. As the chain of lords snaked by the front door, he saw Regent in his deep blue robe. He was staring down at the snow. X felt a tiny flutter of hope, but almost immediately it escaped his body like one of those clouds of breath. For Regent would not speak to him. He would not so much as raise his head. He stood with his arms clasped behind his back, as if they'd been bound together, as if even his body was saying, "This is beyond my control." A voice, high and nasal, called out from farther down the chain.
"Not even your faithful kitten will help you now. You have betrayed him too many times."
It was Dervish. He grinned at X, his pointy, rat-like countenance all aglow.
"You even struck him in the face. Or have you forgotten?" he continued. "Goodness! That was sweet comedy.
X ignored him. Ripper snarled in the Lord's direction. The ice on the house cracked and contracted, each spasm as loud as a rifle shot. Jonah was in there somewhere. X put a hand on Regan's shoulder.
"There is a boy in the house," he said.
Regan clenched his teeth but did not reply.
"You must spare him,"
X pleaded. Again there was no answer, though the muscles in the Lord's neck and jaw twitched violently.
"Please, Tarik,"
said X. At this, a gasp of shock went up among the Lords and traveled down the chain like a lit fuse. Regent closed his eyes as a wave of dread passed through him. Even Ripper was struck dumb. She pulled X away from Regent just as Dervish hooted with glee and came scampering toward them.
"The kitten told you his true name, did he?" he said. "My, what a grand romance you have had! Did you sit by a river and feed each other figs?"
Dervish puffed out his chest and looked down the line of lords, expecting laughter. There was none. Ripper, enjoying his humiliation, sneered at him.
"Will you not shut your mouth just this once?" she said.
"No one likes you."
Dervish's face flushed, and his wormy lips quivered as he tried to think of a clever response. Finally, he turned to X.
"What absurd friends you have," he said. "Yet I suppose only a lunatic would join you on an errand such as this. She shall be punished too, as will the dim piece of meat you called Banger, for serving as your messenger boy."
There was another sound like a gunshot. The ice had contracted again. It was strangling the house. Jonah was in there somewhere. X remembered how they'd all huddled together during the first ice storm. He remembered how it felt to be trapped in a groaning house. He hoped Jonah was looking out at him now. He wanted him to know that he'd come for him. But X couldn't see a thing through the ice. Jonah might have been banging on the glass with a little dinosaur in his hand. He might have been screaming. X would never hear him.
"You must spare Jonah,"
X said again, this time to Dervish.
"He has no part in this."
"Ha!" shouted Dervish. "You have refused to bring me the father. So I will take the son. It seems a fair trade, does it not? I regret snuffing out the life of such a sweet boy. It is not the way of the lowlands. Just as it is not our way to parade about in the overworld like this. But you yourself have driven me to it. It is you, not me, who is the cause of all this pain. It is you who laid waste to this mountain. You who imprisoned that boy in his tomb. Had you not been so insolent, none of this would have come to pass. But you believed yourself too fine for the lowlands, just as your vile mother did. You are better than no one and nothing, I assure you, because you are no one and nothing. The foolish letter you call a name will not alter that. Your beloved, Tarik, should never have trusted you. He dealt you so much rope that you strangled not only yourself, but a family of innocents besides." The words struck X hard. He knew there was truth in them.
"Release the boy," he said, "and I will follow you home."
No word had ever tasted more sour on his tongue than the word home did now.
"I will not release the boy, and you will come regardless," said Dervish. "If you tarry even an instant, we will return for your plaything, Zoe. How much blood will you see spilled before you simply do as you are commanded? I am curious to find out. Now, please, I am weary of words.
Let us watch this house die together, shall we? If you do not misbehave, I will let you pick the boy's bones from the ruins and make a gift of them.